There we go. Well, you're a regular here. You're an OG. You've been around a while.
Yep. Been around a little while. Yep.
So what's on your mind? You grabbed a rando slot. It was funny because I opened them up and it was like, they went for a couple of days. Nobody touched them. And one guy had messaged me on Twitter and he's like, I've been dying to get a rando slot. I said, well, there's one open right now. And he grabbed it. So I just had a really wonderful conversation with him. It'll probably just stay in the estuary, the behind the randos paywall section. But more and more of those, I like it. More and more of those are staying there because those were the kind of conversations that never saw the internet at all. And now at least people who are super interested in the randos conversation, I don't think $3 a month is sort of this nominal fee that gets, you know, most of us aren't going to miss $3 a month. Right. And at least that's kind of get you back there. And people can subscribe and unsubscribe as they will. So
right.
Anyway. But this one, you probably want this one on the open channel.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Okay. Well, what's on your mind?
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to start with, and if it doesn't go beyond this, it's fine. Just expressing gratitude for you and for this little corner because of stuff that's been going on in my life. And I'm going to get into a little detail on that if that's sure. All right. So, so over the last few months, really since June, in June, my father-in-law started, having these crazy symptoms. He could hardly walk, he was shuffling around. And he would kind of gaze out into space randomly. And it reminded me of my grandpa when he got Lyme's. So I said, this is what it is. So I brought that up to my mother-in-law and they went ahead and had him tested. And sure enough, he had, well, after weeks and weeks and weeks of testing that came back negative, I had remembered that my grandpa had tested negative as well. And it ended up, he had neurological Lyme's, which is a little bit more difficult to pick up. And that's what my father-in-law had. So he gets intense antibiotic treatment and, the symptoms are still there. The Lyme's have gone, but the symptoms are still there. So we're like, what's going on here? And about 6 years prior, he had fallen randomly, and there was a small tumor found in the back of his head, kind of like near the base of his brain. And this is going to be somewhat controversial for me to bring up, but I think it's very important to bring up. And he would be fine with this. So he... I come from a non-denominational, charismatic, evangelical, XYZ church, right?
Yep.
And I'm still there. I still love it. I still identify with it. But that's where eventually I'm going to tie in this little corner and how it has helped me tremendously. So father-in-law feels that he hears from God that he has been healed. And he had gotten a Rhema word from God. I don't remember exactly what it was. And he interpreted that as meaning he had been healed from this brain tumor. So fast forward 6 years to this June. And turns out, right, so he got treated for the Lyme's. Symptoms were still there. He started falling. And he would be laying on the floor for longer periods of time, unable to get up.
Mm.
And this is like...
in his 70s,
just about, yeah, yes, okay. Just about 70. Yeah, okay, so it's like right there,
yeah.
So my mother-in-law is saying, like, you know, you should probably get an MRI. Just as she asked him to get an MRI 6 years ago, and he refused, he said, no, I'm standing in faith. Like, if I go get the MRI, that's me kind of being wavering in my faith, so I'm just gonna stand in my faith, right?
Okay.
So long story, well, very long story, a little bit shorter. He goes and gets an MRI eventually. Well, eventually the doctors just give him an MRI because they're like, well, you need to, because my mother-in-law tells them about the tumor that he had. So it turns out he still has it, right? And it's larger. And so it had impacted his ability to swallow because of its location and some of the nerves that it was pressing on. So he ended up kept on getting pneumonia. So they had to put him on a peg for feeding. So he had to get fed through his stomach, essentially through a tube.
Yeah.
Now this guy, I mean, everybody loves to eat, but like this dude, first thing in the morning, he immediately just goes and eats. He loves food. And he hasn't been able to orally eat food since June to this day.
Poor guy.
Yeah, no, it's horrible. And so he gets sent back home with the feeding thing and is told, okay, we're going to have to schedule you for surgery to get this, at least the bulk of this tumor removed.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, that's fine, you know. But then in the interim waiting for the surgery to be scheduled, because he had to show some progress with certain things before they could do the surgery. He ends up falling again due to a brain bleed caused by the tumor.
Oh no.
So he gets emergency brain surgery. The surgery went as well as it could go. But right at the end of it, the surgeon came to see us. We were waiting in the hospital, me, my wife, my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I have to be honest with you. The surgery was way more difficult than we expected it to be. We don't know how it's going to go from here. And he was he was completely unresponsive for hours. And they out for hours longer than he should have been, right? They were expecting him to at least show some indications of responsiveness.
Yeah.
And so there's a chapel at the hospital. We go to the chapel and we're praying there, and the surgeon calls and he says, hey, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. He's starting to respond. And, you know, we had gotten to the point where we just didn't expect anything. We thought this was going to be the end, and now he's starting to respond.
Yeah.
And so we get, you know, obviously we get really excited and we start praising God and we just continue praying. And he shows little by little some more responsiveness. Now there's between then and now, there's about several weeks worth of details that I would have to give. But so today, fast forwarding to today, he is in a, he just got moved to another different live-in rehab. So he's been to a bunch of different rehabs after he got released from the hospital. He's still alive. He is pretty much on an upward trajectory, but he's largely immobile other than like some of his left side. Still can't really speak other than a couple words, still can't eat, right? Still on the feeding tube because, again, not only because of the tumor now, but because of the surgery,
right?
Also may have damaged some of the nerves, right?
Right.
So, now, that's my father-in-law. My mother has been on a lung transplant list for about a year or so. Because she had COPD, a mixture mostly of a long history of smoking, but also some genetic stuff as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this year was going to, by the doctor's estimations, this year was going to be her last year if she didn't get the lung transplant, basically. And, but she got a call for a dual lung transplant. She technically only needed one, but both of her lungs were kind of compromised and a dual lung transplant came up. And so they jumped right on it. And this was in September, towards the end of September. She got the transplant. The surgery went really well. It actually was like quicker than they expected. But the recovery has been up and down significantly. There was a while where it looked like her body was going to just flat out reject the lungs, no matter what medication and stuff that they did. But as of right now, the lungs are doing fine. Now it's a matter of her other organs kind of got compromised in the process to some extent. So, you know, I should be getting more news on that later today, as a matter of fact, on her liver and kidneys. So Kidneys have been on an upward trajectory for the last few days, but the liver has been concerning to the doctors. So I bring all that up in connection with this little corner and in connection with you, because I have watched a little more backstory to make this mean something. My wife grew up in the church. My wife's parents, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, got saved before my wife was born. And they became elders in the church before my wife was born. They were the youth group leaders at the time when I started dating my wife. And so yeah, they've been a tremendously important couple for me in my faith, but also just in life in general. And again, this is always the church that they've been a part of has been the church that they've always been a part of. And it's always been this charismatic, evangelical kind of church. Right. Yep. And, so that's what my wife grew up in. Yep. And of course, as with anyone who has a really good father, the father is the first impression of God.
Yeah.
And, so my father-in-law, my wife's faith is deeply woven into her history, yeah. Her childhood.
Sure, absolutely.
And this has, and is continuing to some extent, throw her for a loop spiritually, right? Because my wife is no simpleton by any means. Like, she's tremendously wise and she's a tremendously wise person, and she has been a tremendous support for me spiritually over the years as well. But that being said, she, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, when he was still able to speak, I've watched them have a very, very hard time spiritually ever since this stuff started unfolding. And even though this is the only Christian faith that I've known personally, let's say,
yeah,
I've always had a sort of critical mindset. And the last time we talked, or maybe it was this is the third time we've talked. So it was either the first or second time we talked, I mentioned how I'm reluctant to engage. I can be reluctant to engage in my faith too critically or intellectually, because as I do that, it tends to get colder, is what I would mention.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have come to be deeply, deeply grateful for that side of me. Because for me, though the stuff that's been happening is very painful, and though I don't understand, like, why, so to speak, it's happening,
right.
It has by no means, like, made me question my faith or question God or anything like that. It's because I've always, historically, I would envy those who had a simpler faith than me in the church. Yeah. And I say simpler in the most loving kind of way. I don't mean it in like a disparaging way, but just like, if the pastor says, name it and claim it. Oh, that's what it is. Name it and claim it. And I used to envy that to a great degree. I'm just, cause my mind just won't shut off. It just, well, but this, and well, could it maybe, you know, and now I'm like, well, yeah. Cause in the back of my head, ever since since before I was a Christian, you think of the mother who has to bury their child after watching them deteriorate from cancer, praying day in and day out for months, years, and the child dies.
Yep.
That's never not been a part of my, you know, and that's why from early on, I loved Ecclesiastes and Job and stuff like that. Cause I'm just like, well, if this stuff is part of the Bible, right? That, to me, that lends it an incredible amount of validity, consistency wise, with how the world actually unfolds.
Right.
That it's not all happy stuff. It's not, you know, Christianity doesn't give you a magic wand. And So what does that have to do with you and this little corner? This little corner has allowed me a space to feel more comfortable entertaining those more critical that more critical part of me in relation to my faith. And over the years in this little corner since whatever 2017 or something, which I can't believe it's like 6 years or something. It's that's how long it's been. But it has enabled me to engage more genuinely with my faith, and in a way has validated my tendency towards having a much more simpler faith than, and simpler by I mean like less complex, less elements of doctrine and theology and stuff like that. There are thoughts that I have about a lot of different things, but in terms of what I think is core and critical, there's like maybe a handful of scriptures, you know, that I, when I read the rest of scripture, it all seems to just converge on these handful of scriptures. And so when and I've found myself over the years as I begin to explore any particular tangent in those times where it would feel like it would get colder for me, the thing that would warm me back up is coming back to that simpler core of the faith. And so I've seen how there are, though there are many, many, many disagreements in this little corner over certain specific, what I consider to be relatively auxiliary details around faith. There are some core principles that seem to be shared across almost everyone, if not everyone, in the little corner. And I guess this also ties into the other thing I wanted to talk about, which is this rebranding of my YouTube channel. In that I've found that entertaining the intellectual side of myself does not go cold if I make sure that it is rooted in love first and foremost, love for God and loving others as myself. If I make sure that whatever little tangent I might feel inclined to go down, if I, to the degree that I'm able to make that subservient to, make that journey in service of becoming better able to love God and love others as myself, then I'm fine, right? And I'm beginning to be able to recognize when I am, let's say, stretching that tether too far and getting in danger of kind of floating off in cold space, right? If I keep that balance good and I don't go too deep in the waters or too far out in space, but I keep myself tempered right, that's when I find that it's not only it not only doesn't get cold, but it's it hopefully it and this seems to be the case, helps me to provide warmth to people around me as opposed to burning out with them or something like that. And again, I am very grateful for this little corner because before I came to this little corner, I my perception of my faith was that I'm to the extent that I want to be critical and explore things, that is a, and this, nobody told me this. It's an impression that I got from people in general, but I think it was just maybe a fear-based thing. Was that like, don't do that. You know, like this is the box. This is the thing, you know, and it's a, you know, don't, don't look at Calvinism too much because there's a bunch of legalism over there, and don't look at Catholicism either because, you know, there's or God forbid Orthodoxy, you know, because there's all that idolatry over there and worshiping Mary. And, you know, I mean, that's a whole thing I could talk about too, is that I've come to value those things. Like, even it used to really bother me when someone would like get up in front of church, whether it's a pastor or a guest speaker or I just talked to somebody on the side, you know, after grabbing coffee and stuff, and they just can't help like nagging about, you know, the legalistic churches or whatever, you know, and it used to really bother me. And I think to a degree, I think all of that stuff is necessary, because I think of the fact that in order for me to grasp like this mug, right, my fingers need to act in opposition to one another, and they're in service of the greater will of my hand, which is in service of my greater will or whatever. But like my thumb and my finger, they're disagreeing right now.
Yeah.
They're both right to do so.
Yeah.
Thank God they're both able to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, there are limits to that, right?
Yeah, yeah,
like if my thumb broke my finger, my other finger, that would be a problem.
Yeah.
It seems to me that I can see how I can at least see how there is utility in there being sometimes vastly different denominations, and perhaps even to some extent the existence of different religions, but certainly different denominations, the utility of them is in the very conflict between the two, or contrast between the two, there's really perhaps instead of contrast, it's a complementary, right? Like it's two puzzle pieces. They don't look the same. They fit right together. And maybe they don't like fitting in together or something, you know, but it gets God's will done somehow. And again, that realization for me has largely come as a result of just, you know, mostly lurking in this little corner, but, you know, even on your Discord, I think I'll go through phases of like interacting on it for like feverishly for a few months at a time. But, it's just really a blast to watch. And then, it's really bizarre. It's so strange.
Like, yeah, really it's very strange.
It, you know? So thank you for continuing to do this stuff and for, you know, continuing to foster this little corner, however directly or indirectly you might be doing so. You know, it is what it is now, and you are in large part to thank for that. I know you're not entirely to thank for that, but without you, there wouldn't be a Bridges of Meaning. So,
yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. And it is, you know, I just spoke with a young man who, again, his video will be in the randos section. And I think it's a good place for it. And when I do think about what on earth we've been doing for these last 6 years on the internet together, on YouTube, on Discord, on Twitter, on all these different strange places, it has for me done very similar things that it has for you. I come with my own prejudices, my preconceived assumptions and biases, and not through argumentation, but through developing personal relationships with people, I begin to understand better. And it isn't that, I mean, a lot of people are like, well, you know, when are you going to become Orthodox? I don't think I'll ever become Orthodox. I think I'll remain Protestant and probably Christian Reformed until the day I die. It's just, it's who I am. It's who I've been. It's where I've been planted. And it isn't that, you know, I'm just doing it because I'm stuck amongst my own people. I still believe the stuff that my tribe believes. I still have my identity and I still have reasons for it. But I'm certainly less judgmental, even if I do have reasons for this and not that. And I am, and like you just said, I mean, the clear command of Christ is to love one another as I have loved you. That is his clear command. And I don't find the grounds to say that the Orthodox do not belong to Christ, and the Catholics do not belong to Christ, and all these little Protestant denominations do not belong to Christ. It is not my place to judge. Christ knows his own, and I will, based on my ignorance, just maintain a bias of openness and love towards others. That is the command. That is the Christian life. And that doesn't just include that generosity and love towards Christians. It also includes everyone, all the way up to and including enemies.
Yep.
And so this little corner for me too has been a similar place where I've had to sometimes just sort of eat humble pie and recognize my own biases and blind spots. And sometimes my biases are formed through fear or through something else. And then to learn that, you know, if Jesus is Lord, what do I have to fear? And the Gospels say that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that is the case, then why do I go into these conversations or relationships sort of in a defensive posture because of fear? And you know, you're right. I'm sorry to hear about your father-in-law and your mother. I mean, these are hard things. And faith that has never been tested tends to not be strong, durable, vigorous, yet tender faith. I mean, that's sort of the miracle of trial, that it can make us strong and gentle, not strong and hard. Yep. It can make us strong and open, not strong and judgmental. And this is exactly the kind of attractiveness we see in Jesus. And you know, the New Testament says again and again and again, and I think it's implicit in the Old Testament, that these trials, you know, it's Jesus starts his public ministry and the first thing that happens, he's out into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And that isn't incidental.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus' whole life, his whole ministry is a trial. And of course, the culmination of the trial is the crucifixion. This is the Christian story. And I think it's best to believe that A, God does respond to prayer. B, God mm-hmm. does heal us. C, mm-hmm. God doesn't always do it mm-hmm. when we want to or on our own terms or according to our own justifications. He seems to heal people who, by our light, seem, you know, unworthy of it. And then he allows those that we believe are worthy to suffer terribly. And this, you know, and I think in this way, Jesus invites us beyond sort of a transactional faith where we sort of believe that I've tithed, I've been faithful, I've owned the right doctrine, I've done all of this, I merit this miracle. And no, at the core of it is none of us merit any of this. This is all grace. And so when in his plan, his saints suffer and die, and, you know, for the most part, that, you know, we all die, Christ still reigns and continues to rule through our deaths. And so, no, I'll pray for your family because you can talk about this stuff intellectually in the abstract, but when it's your family or your child, or your life. I mean, this Job goes through that. If Jess were here, he'd be all over Job. This is, it's not abstract or intellectual. It's real. And that's where the battle is engaged. So, I don't know how it happened. I think it's by the grace of God. I certainly never planned on any of this, but via all of these strange tools that we have, God has given us a community to, I think for many of us, to stand alongside. I mean, I always encourage people to have a local church and a local community, because this online thing can't do things that a local church can. But this online thing can do things sometimes that the local church struggles with. And I think that's what I've experienced too. So,
yeah. Yeah, certainly. If it wasn't for some earlier trials that I had gone through, that helped shed me of some of the like superfluous, can't say the word, some of the auxiliary stuff in faith, that like the death of my sister. So my sister passed. She was 7 years older than me. She passed away 5 years ago. And in a tragic car accident, it was her, her husband, my brother-in-law, and his nephew, all in the car, crashed, all passed away. My mother at the time was in the hospital for COPD and got the news. Like, my dad gave her the news while she's in the hospital, and she, you know, I'm glad I wasn't there when my mom got the news. Now, that being said, my mom that Sunday was up front praising God. Like, she just immediately just, she just dug in. Dug her heels in. And, and I had always wondered before that moment, I had always wondered what would happen to, I've heard of things happening to other people, terrible things, and they walk away from their faith, or this happens or that happens. And I always wondered, you know, God forbid, but like, what would I do if something like that happened? I never presumed that I would be fine. Yeah. And to my own surprise, it was horrible that it happened. Right. Yeah. I was deeply distraught emotionally.
Yeah.
But I just, lots of people would say things like, the typical Lord works in mysterious ways. You know, I guess it was, you know, we don't understand why, but it was her time. And they would say a lot of, you know, a lot of things that aren't necessarily wrong. But for me, it just was, shit happens to the just and the unjust.
Yep. Yep.
And that is it. I refused to make some sort of prescriptive, you know, judgment upon the situation of like, oh, you know, it was because they're, you know, this, that, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, just stuff just happens. I could be driving down the road and a tree falls on my car, and that doesn't mean that there was some thing to it. Now, because I think this is the way I orient myself to, I'm trying to orient myself towards it now anyways, is that when things like this happen, my responsibility is to position myself such that I am a tool for God to take what the enemy meant for evil and turn it for good.
Yep.
Right? God forbid I become a tool for the enemy and make a bad situation worse.
Yep. Yep.
So regardless of whether or not there was a particular meaning to that thing happening, I can be a part of, I can participate in something that allows something greater to come from it, so that maybe some people will look at it and say, oh, that happens so that Christian could go do blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Sure. You could say it that way if you want to say it that way. I don't logically think of it that way, but that's fine. Because here's another thing that I've that I've wrestled with, and I stand pretty firmly on that. And I don't mean this in a way of like I'm special or anything like that, but there seems to be temperament-wise, there are some personality temperaments that are common and some that are less common. Doesn't mean the less common ones are special. It just means they're less common and they have perhaps a particular utility for the overall.
You can apply Paul's comments about the spiritual gifts to that.
Yes.
That's exactly. Right there. Yep.
And because I've always found myself being, so, when I was younger, something must be wrong with me because I'm just so weird. And maybe to some extent, that's still how I view myself. But so but of course, people are attracted to like-minded people. So I have a very, very, very small group of friends who are all equally weird in different ways.
Yeah.
And Peugeot has talked to this in various ways. You've talked to this in various ways, I think, Peterson, so on, that there's a place for those who navigate the boundaries and perhaps ebb and flow within and outside of the boundaries, like a sentry of some sort, keeping an eye out. You perceive that which is, let's say, like for most of the people in the center, too far out into chaos, right? But and you be careful not to go to and explore too far, and you try to wisely integrate what you find, or the key word is try, because you could be wrong, and you'll find out. If you're wrong, I mean, hopefully you don't get burned at the stake, but like you find out that you're either wrong or it's just not the right time, not the right place, because nobody's going to accept it or whatever. But I think the healthier thing is to assume I'm probably wrong. So why did I bring that up? This little corner is full of strange people. Like I am inclined to believe that at least 90% of us who participate in this little corner are on the boundaries.
It is the island of misfit toys. It really is.
Yes. And so it's been great to see that. And me being always a sort of, I have a contrarian mode that's always kind of active. And so I'll see some people in this little corner making, it almost seems like somewhat disparaging remarks about people who have common views of things, you know, like the typical Protestant evangelical charismatic person or the typical this or that. And now I'm just as likely to make that sort of comment. But when I see someone else make that comment, I'm immediately like, okay, what's the other side of this? And it's that, well, good luck finding the boundary to navigate if 90% of people aren't within the bounds. Like, what are you guarding? What are you trying to help? And so it's been really good because I, thankfully, liberal arts education and criminal justice helped me with this, but I can like the instant that I go to be critical of something, I have to present to myself the opposing view. Yeah. You know, and so this little corner is really helpful for me to not only validate my weirdness, but also to remember the value of everybody else.
Yep.
So, I know we don't have too much time left, so if you don't mind, I would like to talk a little bit about what I've changed in my channel and this new kind of project that I'm.
Well, okay. What's your channel?
Agapologia. Okay. So it's just smashing up. Yep. Yep. I can kind of see the thumbnail inside there. So the idea is pretty amorphous, but like just specific enough, I feel, to foster a particular environment, maybe, right? So the idea is, I got tired of just making my own content and just rambling about things. Now, I still do it. There's still most of my channel has still been that ever since I've done the rebranding. But I've deliberately, like, I made a Discord server, and I got a surprising amount. For me, it was a surprising amount of people within the first few days coming in, like, you know, 17, 18, 19 people, something like that. And a few of them were pretty active, and I've had a couple of them on live streams and stuff. So that's been nice. The idea is, having been exposed to this melting pot of this little corner, but wanting to host a, I've noticed that some of us weirdos in this little corner are, let's say, less explicitly intellectually minded. I have an intellectual side for sure, but I buck against, like, too much terminology,
too much theory,
too much in the head. I want there to be the nature of it being an online community. It's not exactly boots on the ground, right? But I want it to be more heart than head. So that's the idea behind Agapologia. Is I want people of various perspectives. I don't want it to all just be a love fest in the sense of everybody agrees with one another, right? Which, one of the great things is, I do have, Yosef is over there. And so he's provided me with some resources on like Chesed love and stuff like that. So that's been really helpful. I'm hoping to have a conversation with him soon.
Yeah.
I want various perspectives on love. I want lots of conversations, particularly in the Discord. And then whoever's in the Discord, if they want to make their own videos for the channel or jump on a live stream or whatever. So it's slightly kind of in the Jacob type area, where, you know, he'll let people do streams on his channel.
Yeah.
But it's just a little bit more pointed, right? It's a little bit narrow. It's quite a bit narrower than Jacob's, right? Jacob's pretty
wide open.
So
have you been doing live streams? Using StreamYard and that whole thing? I see some live streams, but
yeah, I did a couple. I actually switched over to Streamlabs because they had a ridiculous Black Friday sale.
Oh, really?
For like their premium stuff. So it was like 50% off. I don't know if they still do. But that, like, Streamlabs has like way more than StreamYard.
Really?
Not that it's necessarily better, but it's like it's tailored. Streamlabs is tailored to gaming streamers, but if you do their premium thing or whatever, it allows you to do your editing, your thumbnail creation, your live streams, your solo video. Like, you can do basically everything within Streamlabs, which is pretty nice. So it's, in terms of live streaming a discussion, it's similar to StreamYard, right? So you send a link to somebody, they open the link, they jump in, they, you know, they say yes to their mic and camera, and that's it. We're good to go. But you can do nice little overlays and stuff. And I've been trying to make stuff a little bit spiffy over there, but yeah. So
yeah, a lot of sort of adopted StreamYard just because it was easy, and Jacob was kind of the apologist for it. But
it may still be, it probably still is, like, the most popular choice, I think, StreamYard. But there's alternatives cropping up everywhere because, that's the tech world for you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Huh. I'll have to check that out sometime.
Yeah. So I'm tired today, 'cause I did.
Did a shift.
I did Streamlabs last night. I did with an in real life friend, who lives somewhat nearby, but not close enough for us to get together. So we did a live stream, and we ended up talking until like 1 o'clock in the morning. And then the night before that, I did a similar thing with someone from my Discord. So, but then I just randomly checked the rando slot on like yesterday, and I'm like, there's one there. It's Tuesday.
Yeah, I know. Those sat out there for a while. It's like, wow, folks have given up on the links. And I mean, so much of that just depends on my schedule. I mean, if I'm, if I have time, I open them up. If I don't have time, I don't open them up. It's just that simple. And of course, nobody can know my schedule, but I learned early on not to just open them up in general, because then I would get crunches when things would come. And then other people would sign up for one, 3-4 months in advance. And then when it would come to time, they'd be like, yeah, I can't do it. And it's like, the next 4 months are, so then I just open them up when they're available. But I'm glad you got one, because it's good to catch up. And I'm sorry to hear about your, and I pray that it turns out okay. Yeah, I mean, thank you. It's, and you know, especially for your wife, it's hard.
Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. I try to. So, my wife comes from an Italian family. She is the Italian American woman, and and so there's a tactfulness with which, you know, I've got to do certain things, and I also I actually feel bad for people, and I guess this goes for you too. I feel bad for people. And this is ironic because my children will be these people who grew up in the church. So I grew up outside of the church until I was 16 years old. And then I had a salvation experience, right? And so I have a type of value for it that my wife just can't have. Like she's always had it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And, so I'm validating where she's coming from, where she's having a very hard time understanding why would God allow this to happen? What did my dad do to deserve this kind of thing? Knowing, and she knows that that's not how things work, but in your heart, it's what you're going to feel.
Absolutely.
And she's not going to, Italian American, she's not going to sugarcoat, she's not going to pretend that she feels otherwise.
No, she's not.
She's not going to pretend.
I grew up in New Jersey with a lot of Italians. Yes. And it's their culture.
Yep. Well, her dad's from New Jersey. So she was born in New Jersey. So, but so I just try to encourage her. I say, listen, I don't think there is any understanding this. And I don't expect you to just pretend that your faith is fine and everything like that. But I just want you to know that I genuinely believe and know that God is with you and loves you and is sorrowful for you that you are going through this. Yeah. And if you can't bring yourself to believe in his love currently, then I'll just continue to do my best to be that love manifest for her right now, you know, that's all I can do. And it's a tremendous responsibility, but it's also, okay, one more thing. I know we only have like 10 minutes left, but
I have less than that, 'cause I got another thing after this too. Okay. So,
with my in-laws being my spiritual parents, right? They brought me into the faith and everything. This has been a tremendous gift, in a sense, that I find myself being able to repay them for all of these years of spiritual support that they've given me.
Yes.
And again, this is in some part in thanks to you and the communities that have sprouted up around you. So thank you.
I'm glad that this has, if anything I want from this stuff, it's that it helps people, and that through you, I can, you know, be an encouragement to them. That's deeply gratifying. So thank you. Yeah. I'm going to put this in the membership section ASAP as soon as I get time today. And then when it's right, I'll put it out into the full channel. And if there's any other links that you want me to include, send them to me and I'll get them in the video then.
You want them in email or Discord?
Email.
Okay. All right.
All right. Great, Christian. It's good to see you. God
bless
you. Thank
you so much. Likewise.
And God be with your family as you go through this trying time.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.